So Ray, we talked about the matches at the 1966 World Cup. What were the fans like at Goodison Park during the round of matches?
Well, to us it was an absolute revelation, because we didn't have any history on Merseyside of foreign fans coming to the city. I think Everton had played a couple of European ties by then, and Liverpool probably had by then. Yes, they must have done, because they were champions in 65. So they probably played only a couple of European matches too. So we weren't used to seeing overseas fans on Merseyside. I mean, nowadays it's commonplace. We get foreign tourists here to see the city, never mind the football. But in those days, it was unheard of. So the World Cup comes along, and we've got people coming from all over the world to see football in Liverpool. I don't know how the Bulgarians could afford to come, but they were here. And especially the Brazilians, that was amazing, because they were in the yellow shirts in those days, and we didn't do it, banging their drums, boom, 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 Brazil, boom, 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 all through the game, sitting up in the stand somewhere. There were people outside the grounds flogging tickets, Germans flogging souvenirs. I remember one walking up and down our side saying, Weltwilli, Weltwilli. He couldn't pronounce World Cup Willy. The Germans couldn't say Willy. Weltwilli, Weltwilli. Oh, another thing. I bought a World Cup Willy with a sew-on badge and sewed it on my college scarf. And it's still on my college scarf to this day. I was at college at Coventry, I think I mentioned earlier. And I had an old school scarf, navy, dark green and white stripes, not a woolen one, a proper, you know, university type scarf, but our old school rather than the school scarf itself, with my World Cup Willy badge sewn on it. And I've still got it somewhere, rolled up tight in a plastic bag in the back of the wardrobe somewhere. World Cup, Weltwilli, Weltwilli, foreign fans, amazing. Don't believe you saw any Korean fans, because I think it was a bit of a closed country and a long way to come. But nonetheless, yeah, foreign fans, amazing.
And obviously England got to the final. What are your memories of watching that game against West Germany?
Well, we had a TV by then, but we hadn't had it all that long. But it was black and white. I can't remember whether the game was broadcast in colour on television, but I presume it must have been. No substitutes, of course, in the World Cup final in those days. Black and white telly. But I do remember going to see the game on the cinemas within a very short time afterwards. Not just the Pathé News highlights, the game on telly. Sorry, in the cinema. I presume as broadcast by the BBC, but on the cinema and watching it all over again. And then later in that year, I don't know how long it would be, but I suppose it would take a while, a feature film was produced of the World Cup tournament, all the games, with a voiceover commentating on the action off the pitch, the fans, the trainers, what was happening to the players when they were injured. You could even hear the feet running across the grass. I don't know how they do it. They obviously dub it on afterwards, you know, as though the crowd was cut out. You could just hear the players, bum, 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 feet hitting the ball. Really atmospheric film. And I can't remember the name of it.
The Everton team, of course, won the 1966 FA Cup. Do you feel any of them players should have been in that England team?
They were certainly good enough. Yeah, certainly good enough. Westy was certainly good enough in goal. Ray Wilson did play. Oh, an interesting fact. In those days, to get to Wembley for the final was a wonderful shout. The first player ever to go up the Wembley steps to collect a winner's medal twice in the one year, Ray Wilson of Everton. There was no cup winner's cup. Sorry, there was no other than FA Cup in those days. There was no League Cup, there was no other cups. That was it. The FA Cup final was at Wembley. Up the 39 steps for your cup and the medal. Ray Wilson did it in May, and he went back up in July and did it again. Got another winner's medal twice in the one year. An Everton player. A first for an Everton player. However, the World Cup final, yeah, fabulous. And our players playing in it, I think it would be hard to push. Brian LeBone may have made the squad, don't really know. Other English players in our team at the time, couldn't say. But of course, we did sign Alan Ball immediately after the World Cup final and set a record of £110,000. Harry Catterick bought him. But and by the time the following season kicked off, I think we played Liverpool in some form of game. It may well have been, the Charity Shield, but it wasn't a Goodison. It wasn't at Wembley. It was at Goodison Park. I think it was the honour of the, no, I don't know which way around it was, but Everton as cup holders hosted Liverpool in the opening game of the following season for the Charity Shield, and the World Cup was there being paraded around the ground, being carried by Ray Wilson, Alan Ball and Roger Hunt, who had actually played in the final. All three of them were playing at Goodison Park by the end of August when the season kicked off, and also there were two other Liverpool players in the squad, Jerry Byrne, can't remember the other one, don't remember, but they were all involved in it. Yeah.
What do you think of England's prospects at the moment? Do you think the international team will eventually win another World Cup, or do you feel it's the best days are behind them now?
It's a shame. I think it's probably come perhaps a year too late. Somehow, I've got a funny feeling. This happens, doesn't it, really? They've got a good chance. I must say, they've got a good chance. You have to fear for the central defensive positions right now. It seems like Terry is not that super defender he was. It seems like Ferdinand could be injured just a bit too often. Who knows what's going to happen? And after that, who do you choose? You've got to choose, well, Jagielka maybe. Is he really a World Cup winning defender? Depends, you would like to think so.
Depends how many games he's managed
gets
to get
in. Yeah. He's only got two or three more. Maybe he could play a couple more. You don't know, but I would like to think so, but I'm sure Spain are going to be a tough nut to crack.
So you fancy to win it this year, Spain?
Pardon?
Do you fancy Spain to win it?
Spain are going to be in there, aren't they? Well, it would be their own fault if they weren't, put it that way.
Okay, so talking about Everton and Liverpool, do you feel the idea of ground sharing is a good idea or a bad one?
I don't know. It's a hard one to shout. I would be happy with it if it means that's the way to get a 60,000 seat stadium for Everton. If we can't do it on our own and we haven't got a squillionaire, even Liverpool, who we're going to bring along these two Americans with money to burn, it turns out that it's all promises. No money there at all, really. And we can't all be Manchester City, can we, and inherit a ready-made ground like that. We can't all be sponsored by an international airline like Arsenal and build a brand new stadium. If somebody comes along with the money, like Terry Leahy from Tesco or some other big developer, I think it would be churlish of us to turn it down just because some fans want to stay where they are.
Do you feel the fans will accept this? Everton fans will accept the ground share, or do you think they're too stubborn to accept it?
I think you'd get some who refuse to go. Some might be, if you like, so dyed in the wool that they'll turn their backs on it, but it's going to be a real mean Evertonian, isn't it, who's going to refuse ever to go again. And don't forget, if they can get another 15 or 20,000 in every week, more people are going to be able to go, aren't they? More of us share in the passion.
What about the proposed site in Stanley Park? Do you feel comfortable with that? Or
yeah, I don't know. I've been to Stanley Park recently, and I've been in the conservatory, had a meal there, enjoyed the layout of the park, the refurbished lake, the new playgrounds for the kids. It's a smashing space. in North Liverpool now. I used to live just round the corner, and it's nice to see it restored. Shame to see Liverpool take a chunk of it for themselves, but if it was going to be a shared stadium, whilst I would see it as a great shame that they'd have to take a big chunk of the park, I think that's the only way. It would be great for it to be there as a sort of football city, and only time will tell now. It, within the city boundary, though, I think has got to be a stipulation if it's going to be any sharing done at all.
Has football become too commercial for fans now?
Yeah, I think the commercial influence has disrupted the rhythm, if you like, of Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. That's long gone. I don't know, some fans will be able to tell you how long it was since Everton kicked off at 3 o'clock on a Saturday at Goodison Park. And if you like, United and Liverpool and Arsenal will all moan the same way, won't they? Because somebody else has always decided when they kick off. Midday on a Sunday, what's that about? Silly. 4 o'clock on a, I don't know, bonkers. So in that case, you know, in that regard, commercialism has interfered with, you know, the ritual for 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. But in lots of cases, we could never have afforded to see the world's best players running about our playing fields on a Saturday or Sunday, could we? No way. They'd all have gone to Italy and Germany and Spain, wouldn't they? But now we're, they say, paying the best wages anywhere.
Do you feel then that football clubs are now giving their attention more to the TV companies rather than the fans themselves, and that fans' views and opinions will now dwindle and TV will just rise above? And
I think there's a danger of that. I think there is a danger of it. But I'd like to think that in Everton's case, as long as Bill Kenwright is the chairman, we've got an Evertonian, a proper Evertonian, in the chair with the influence. And I think he's got the clubs, and that means the fans as well as the clubs itself, shareholders' interests at heart. And I would hope that sufficient heed would be paid to the fans' views in any moves that Everton make for their future development. But if the day comes when Bill Kenwright and his team do find a replacement, I think that's the time when maybe the fans' views are going to be one step removed from where they are now.
Okay. And can you tell me an Everton fact or story that most people haven't heard before from you?
Okay. I've been a volunteer with the Everton Collection now for a while, and part of the job has been reading through the transcripts of the original minute books from Everton's board meetings from 1800 and when it was founded, 1878. We're all supposed to have that tattooed on our chest, aren't we? 1878, at least on the badge on our pyjamas. And some of them make fascinating reading from those early days. One story that sticks in my mind, first Alex Young, Sandy Young he was known as, centre forward for Everton, leading goal scorer, played in the 1906 Cup final that Everton won, scored a goal in the final. Hero, Scotsman, but local hero down here. Not 3 years later, there's a minute of the board meeting. It was along these lines, I'm not reading, I'm just recalling, along these lines, it was reported that Young, just his surname, he's an employee, don't forget, and these are tops, that Young was, it was reported that Young had been seen, or Young had been, whatever, it had come to the board's attention anyway, that he'd been seen drunk somewhere. And he was hauled, he was invited to appear before the next meeting of the board to explain himself. Then, the next meeting of the board, Young, just the word Young appears in the margin. And then the narration goes something along the lines of, Young appeared before the board to explain his recent conduct. And he was No, he probably didn't say conduct twice, but it then went on to say something like, and he was warned as to his future conduct, and he gave an undertaking that no such recurrence, da-da-da-da-da. Blow me. If it wasn't before that very season was out, or the beginning of the next season, and we're talking about 1908, 109 now. Young appears in the margin again. And the story was narrated something like, it was reported that Young had been observed to take a surfeit of stout. Drunk too much Guinness, in other words, in board speak, and he was invited to appear before the board to explain himself. Then the following meeting, he appears before the board to explain himself, and he is warned that should any future occurrence happen, that he would be denied his benefit. Players were given a benefit match after so many seasons, and they were threatening to deny him his benefit.
That's sort of like a testimonial, wasn't it?
Testimonial, yeah. They called it his benefit. Deny him his benefit. How about that? Because even if players left after 4 or 5 seasons and they were signed for another club, they'd get a share of what their benefit would have been had they stayed. Strange. But they did. And, you know, the transfer fee would be so much money, less a share of his benefit, whatever it was. However, they then sold him to Tottenham, I think he went. And you can imagine a fella who's fond of the drink, a Scotsman, fetching up in London, playing for Tottenham. He had no chance to do the poor man. And I think the story eventually unfolded, although I didn't follow it all the way through, because he was no longer an Everton player, therefore no longer appearing in the board minutes. Sold him to Tottenham and that was it. But the story went later on that he emigrated to Australia. And there was a rumour went round for a while that he was hanged for murder, but he never was. He did get involved in some form of altercation in which somebody did die. So you can imagine an Everton centre forward scoring in the Wembley Cup final ends up in Australia somehow, in prison, following a death. There was a story about it was the death of his brother. But the story didn't end there. He did end his days in Glasgow, back home. And there's a report in one of the minutes later that somebody from Glasgow, some charity from Glasgow, wrote to Everton to ask if they would consider sending money up to that charity that was helping look after the heretofore centre forward and hero, Sandy Young. What a sad tale.
Maybe.
Not a lot of people will know that, but some will. But there's another story, and it concerns the dreaded Manchester United. Reported in the board minutes, two players whose names I can't think of right now had reported to the trainer that they'd been approached by a Manchester United player and offered money.
When was this?
About the same time, 1910, 11. Certainly before the First War, although I can't recall the exact year. And so the board invited these two players to appear before to give their version of the story. And they turned up the following board meeting, and it named the players, but I can't recall their names now. And they said what they'd told the trainer, stuck to their story, that a Manchester United player, who they now were asked to name as James Anderson, had offered them money. And the board invited them to go along with the story, to meet James Anderson, and to see what he turned up with. Bit of entrapment, if you like. And they eventually went, met this man, Sandy Young, who turned up, and it said this in the minutes, turned up with a Jew. What a horrific way to put it. Turned up with a Jew, capital letters J-E-W. And they were given money in an envelope. So when they eventually reported back to the board after this event, they didn't actually say what it was for. But you can only imagine, can't you? It was to influence the result of a game for betting purposes, perhaps. I don't know. So it's the IPL, you know, isn't the only place rife with betting. And that was the story. And it eventually unfolded throughout many months that Everton Football Club reported Manchester United and their player to the Football Association. And James Anderson, Manchester United player, was banned for life.
Interesting.
How about
story.
That? A little story about bribery and corruption affecting Everton.
So this volunteering work that you're doing with the Everton Collection, is this...
It throws up some smashing stories like that, yeah.
How did you come to start working for the Everton Collection?
Well, funny enough, a friend of my wife's, that I happen to know anyway, worked in the Central Library in Liverpool City Centre in William Brown Street, and she happened to come to visit us, and we were sitting in the garden one afternoon, and she said, "You're an Everton fan, aren't you? Why don't you get involved with the Everton Collection?" I said, "What do you mean, get involved with it? It's being done, isn't it?" She said, "Yeah, but they need volunteers." "What, to do what?" She said, "Well, I don't know, I'll find out for you." So the following week she rang me and said, "There's this job you can do. Do you mind sitting in a dusty room with books and reading?" I said, "No, if it's Everton, I'll do it." So that was about September 2009, I think. And every week since then I've been, not for the last few weeks because Easter's got in the way, and then last week they were too busy with the closing down of the exhibition. And, I've just volunteered and I love it. It's absolutely fascinating, some of the information you come across. Lots of it is yawningly boring, you know, reporting how much money they took at the gate against such a team, and then how much money was taken at the gate in the reserve game away at Stockport County. But nonetheless, fascinating stories like those two I've just told you. Yeah.
What does it mean to be an Everton fan?
Well, sometimes it means a lot. And when you're there, it's terrific. You get carried along, don't you? It's a grand old team to support, as they say. Yeah. I must tell you a story against myself.
Sorry.
I'm not the die for the cause Evertonia. I'll put Everton first. I sometimes try to trick the children I work with in school. They say, "Who do you support, sir?" And I say this: I support Liverpool, except when they're playing Everton. And they look at me. They don't know what to make of it. "Well, you support Liverpool then, or Everton, sir?" I say, "I've just told you, I support Liverpool, except when they're playing Everton, because Everton will always be the first team for me. No other team matters that much. But then if Liverpool are playing Manchester United, I'd rather Liverpool won. If Liverpool are playing some other team, you know, I don't care. But Everton playing any other team, Everton have got to win. Or you can be miserable for a short time. I don't exactly kick the cat, but I'll curse." But life goes on, doesn't it?
It does. Our interview's coming to an end. Is there anything you'd like to add, Ray, to the recording before we finish?
I'm going to go back to a question you asked me earlier on.
Yeah, it's fine.
About, have you ever met an Everton player? And I'm going to link that, because what caused it to come back into my mind was the question I was telling, the story I was telling you about just now about the Manchester United and the bribe thing. I think every Everton fan knows of that fabulous midfielder we had in the early 60s called Tony Kay. Tony Kay, we signed him from Sheffield Wednesday, I think Catterick brought him. And it later turned out that he was indicted by the Football Association for having been involved in taking a bribe when playing for Sheffield Wednesday, along with two other players. Bronco Lane was one of them. nicknamed Bronco after a cowboy on television at the time, Bronco Lane, and I can't remember the other fella. And these three players were found guilty at law, not just the FA, you know, not behaving properly, bringing the game into disrepute. This was bribery and corruption. And all three of them were put in jail. And I forget how it came about, but Tony Kaye disappeared, did a bunk, reputedly to Spain. Now, it was in about 1964, five. No, later than that, much later than that. 1969, I go on holiday to Spain with my cousin, Benidorm. And we go along. We've got a young woman in tow who happened to be staying in our hotel. And we went out along the prom one afternoon, boiling hot, Spain, September. Went for a drink in a bar. And I looked across and I thought, that's Tony Kaye. Blimey, this is where he is. He's in Benidorm. Not making a very good job of hiding, is he? There he was, sat with a Nordic looking man. Blonde, well made, bigger than Tony. I thought, who's that? So I thought, I'm going to go and see if it's Tony Kaye for certain, but I was certain it was. And I went over and said, hello, are you Tony Kaye? And he didn't say anything. But the fellow next to him said, no, his name's Johansson. And he didn't say it in a foreign accent, he said it in an English accent. No, his name's Johansson. And I looked at him and went, all right, Tony, I won't tell anybody. And he just gave me a little bit of a nod, and I walked away. And the girl said to me, who's Tony Kaye? She was American, funny enough. So I had to explain to her, you've heard of soccer? Oh yeah, soccer. Well, one of the best teams in England is Everton, and he's a player at Everton. Did, until this happened to him. And he was an England player as well. You can imagine, a real star. And he's come to this, skulking round in bars in Spain to avoid the law. So I was sad to have met Tony Kaye in those circumstances, but it's left me with a little story to tell about an Everton player involved in bribery, but very, very relieved to say, nothing to do with Everton Football Club.
Right, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
And, delighted to have been able to tell some of those stories, and your questions brought out some of those memories I thought I'd long forgotten. Thank you very much.
Thank you.